Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's episode of the podcast. I couldn't be more excited to have, I consider, he never knew this, but one of my very OG original mentors when I first started Smart Dating Academy. And I went out and I started to do my research on how do I do this in a really methodical way with the best experts guiding my wisdom. And one of the first books I bought was Mars and Venus on a Date. So in case you don't know by this alone who I'm bringing on the podcast today, you might have been hiding under a rock or in a cave, and we'll talk about the cave. But I have Dr. John Gray. Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Bella, it's a real pleasure to be with you. And I have to say, I'm on a bit of a tirade these days. I do a lot of interviews. And my belief is somebody doesn't understand that men and women are different, they're going to give the wrong advice. And so I'm so happy that you started with understanding men and women are different. So we have to have a different mindset if we want to succeed in having loving, lasting, happy, fulfilling relationships, which people are having today. You know, a lot of people think everything's a disaster, but it's not. As you know, and I know, people are meeting each other. They're having happy relationships. They're in love. They have families. This is happening. And all we get is this sort of negative press. And the truth is that by understanding how to communicate in a new way that maybe our parents didn't know, and how to find a partner in a new way, the world has changed. We can be successful. And it's people like you that help people hold their hand and help them find that success. So I'm really happy to be with you.
And people like you too. I believe in love. I love love. I have found what I call the lid to my pot. I've been married for 27 years. I know you were incredibly happily married as well. So we're both big believers in love. So let's jump right in and talk about, you know, tell us the differences between men and women.
Let me correct my bio there. Yes, I was married to Bonnie for 34 years until she passed, and we had a lovely relationship. We have 4 grandchildren, 3 daughters. Now I'm remarried. I started dating again after 2 years. I started dating. I needed some time to do my grieving and my healing, and now I moved on. And I'm very happily married, and I'm continuing to learn more ideas on how I've always been learning. Your relationship gets to a certain point, there's going to be a challenge. You learn something new. You get to another point, you're going to learn something new. And so being able to continue to grow is quite exciting for me. And I'm happily married again.
Oh, that's wonderful. And how is it being a newlywed now with everything that you know?
It's fantastic. It's absolutely but here's one of the challenges after it's been now almost 4 years that I've been married. Okay. So it's been a while, but we are newlyweds still. We still in that amazing feeling. And I know how to keep that feeling. See, that's the thing. When I learned with Bonnie, how to bring back the passion in the relationship. But one of the challenges we faced, okay, is my wife said to me, well, I know how much you love Bonnie. And that's my wife had 34 years. I know she will always be in your heart. Do you love Bonnie more than you love me? And I told her, I said, sweetheart, I always love Bonnie. She's my soulmate, and you're also my soulmate. Mm-hmm. I said, I can't imagine how grateful I am for the healing that took place after Bonnie died. After Bonnie died was a very hard time for me, where I had to reflect on every possible mistake that I made in the marriage and feeling remorse. And not that I was a bad husband. I mean, the last thing my wife told me is I said to her, I'm sorry I couldn't save her. And she said, you're my hero. You've always been my hero. This was parting words, and then she's off. So it was so touching for me. But
wow.
heart, I tried to save her. I wish I could save her and whatever. And she kind of saved me from that by also never taking any of my advice while she was healing or trying to heal from cancer. Okay. He was like, no, it's my journey. What I feel right. You can give me options and so forth. And she was very wise to do that because I already felt bad enough that I couldn't save her. But anyway, when I went through, I remembered in the grieving process, every mistake, every difficulty that we'd had, and we learned lessons from, but I could feel remorse. Even I wish I'd just done known this. I wish I'd just done this. I wish I'd done this. So I told my wife now, I said, so sweetheart, the healing that I went through with Bonnie opened my heart more than I can imagine. And so you're the lucky recipient of me being more loving than I was even with her. So that's why I could love her more, because I can give more love. And that's a really optimistic thing for all of us who have been in relationships. And I was, before Bonnie of 34 years, I was married to a woman for 2 years, and it was devastating to me. And I healed that. That was just a 9-month healing. And then I convinced Bonnie to marry me. Actually, before I got my first wife, I tried to marry Bonnie, my wife of 34 years, and she said you weren't ready. Because, see, you can be with your soulmate and not be ready and not know it. One of the last conversations we had with the children all around Bonnie the day before she died was the kids were saying, well, how did you meet Dad? You know, they hadn't even known. So she said, oh, I was at Lake Tahoe and swimming, and I came out of Lake Tahoe, and there was your dad. He was so interested in me. And they said, well, how did you feel? You know, what did you feel, Mom? She says, I knew he was my soulmate. My kid said to me, well, Dad, what did you feel? I said, I just felt like I wanted to spend a night with this woman.
I am attracted to you.
Yeah, that's as far as I could go with it. But she really, we were together a couple of years, but she felt that I wasn't ready. And there was truth to that. I wasn't ready. You know, I didn't even have much of a job. I'd been a monk for 9 years and just getting my feet into the real world. And I was also at that time not as conscious about relationship and intimacy and marriage. I've been a monk. And so I came out into California, and everyone was sort of into polyamorous, you know, many relationships. So I was thinking, oh, okay, I'm a free spirit. I'm going to do the polyamorous thing. I had lots of girlfriends. And I'm grateful for that time, because for me, having sex with many women, I would interview them first, since I'd been a monk. And I'd say, help me understand your body, because I've been a monk. I haven't made love that much. Even though as a teenager, I was very active. I would listen to them, what they like in sex, what feels really good. We'd make love, and afterwards we'd talk some more. And then I had another girlfriend like that. And I'd go around, and I realized how different women were from men. See, that was like really hearing the intimacy. And I thought, every man needs to understand how women are different. And that came the beginning of my work, which was understanding Enlightened Sexuality, which was my first class. And I'm still teaching Enlightened Sexuality. I have a whole book on that, which is Mars, Venus in the Bedroom. And since I just mentioned it, I'll mention even back then I had this idea, which is so many of the experiences that women have are all about ways to be pleasured. But then what I realized is deeper than that, it was feeling loved.
Yeah.
This was the purpose of sex, which is to feel love. And we call it making love. It's sex to make love. And that was the theme of those early classes. It's still a theme in my work. I call it Enlightened Sexuality, which is pleasure is good, but don't focus so much on the pleasure, but focus on the relationship and feeling the pleasure, particularly for men, not so much for women, but feeling the pleasure allows men to feel the love in their heart. See, men cannot feel as much as women. Now, this is biologically true. This is, you know, we said we'll talk a little bit about this book, Beyond Mars and Venus.
Yeah, let's go there.
It's just we are in a different time now where women have started producing more male hormones. Okay, now that's testosterone. So we have a lot of women with more testosterone. What that means is they're not spending as much time in their life producing estrogen. So if you look at research of women in the workplace, for example, which is a very testosterone-producing environment, when you're in a testosterone-producing environment, anytime you're feeling independent, I have to make decisions based upon what I do in order to produce a result. And it's not based on just love. It's based upon producing a result, making money. Okay, so when you're in that context, every decision you make is a source of stress, and it produces the hormone testosterone. Now, for men in the workplace, every decision is a source of stress because it's always going to be, is it going to work or is it not going to work?
Right.
No decision, you don't have that stress, but I have to make a decision. So whenever you have to make a decision, the potential of loss is there. So the hormone that gets produced when you make decisions is testosterone. Men need to make 10 times more testosterone than a woman in order to feel good. Just to keep from feeling stressed, men need to make 10 times more testosterone. When women are in the workplace, they're making these high levels of testosterone, not as much as a man, but what they're not making is estrogen. Now, estrogen, when a woman is stressed, her estrogen levels are low. Her testosterone levels are high. So what we see today, and we can see the result of this. We can go on and we can see women today that testosterone levels, until eventually they get older, they will drop. But the problem for women is low estrogen. Anytime a woman is stressed, her estrogen levels are low. Now, what produces estrogen is feeling I can have what I need. It's just simply that. If someone comes to you, you're the love coach, and I'm going to come to you. What do I do? I'm a woman. What do I do? Just talking about to you about what I want, what I don't like, what I wish, what should I do next? Any of that kind of seeking your advice or your help will raise my estrogen.
You feel safe.
You feel safe. You feel heard. And you feel, because you feel safe, you feel I can depend on you. See, if you don't feel safe, then you feel I can't depend. I have to do it myself. So feeling safe is this primary ingredient, but it's opens the door for estrogen levels to go higher. And when estrogen levels go higher, you're happier, you feel more love, you feel more vulnerable, you feel more attracted to the opposite sex. That's also a big symptom. They found that when women's estrogen levels are close to ovulation levels, that's when they're most attracted to men.
Makes sense.
And they also found that women on birth control, when they stopped birth control, they weren't attracted to their partners. Because birth control doesn't allow you to experience the natural cycle.
It takes over.
Right? So what we want is our behaviors to support our natural cycle. If you're a woman, and for men, we have a cycle and it's not like a woman's. Okay. We need work, non-personal work. Okay. If I'm working for my wife or my children, my estrogen goes up because I love them. But with my clients and my work, I like them, I'm friendly with them, but it's not like I'm in love with them, I'm going to share my life with them, right? So I don't make that much estrogen. So that allows me to make more testosterone. And for men, testosterone, we need to make 10 times more than a woman just to be happy. We need to have surges of doubling testosterone to feel romantic towards a woman. So this is why, you know, on the dark side of this, men can be addicted to porn, because porn will give them a temporary surge of doubling testosterone, but then it will crash back down. And
right.
Over time, then their testosterone levels go down, which is what we're seeing now.
And they've got to do more and more and see more and more porn in order to try to even get to that original level.
That's right. That's what's called an addiction. Is it, you know, easiest way for people to think about that is eating a potato chip. You've got to eat another one.
Can't eat just one.
And it just what? You just go up and then comes right back down. With porn, it goes up. And then what you have is men who are like addicted to that rush. And to the extent, and this is a problem, we have solutions. To the extent that a man is addicted to that rush, his testosterone goes lower and lower. He doesn't get that rush from a real woman. Okay, so a real woman is real. Reality doesn't produce fantasy. So you want to be real. You don't get the surge of this fantasy, which is something which appears to be more real, and it's not. Okay, so, you know, we have this primitive part of our brain, which is twice as big in men than women, and it regulates the sex drive. And if I go online and I see 64,000 naked girls all wanting to have sex with me, that's the way my primitive brain just sees it. It thinks I'm the king monkey because all the females want to have sex with me. And so I get a big surge of testosterone, but it's not real. And that's what we know is that, you know, when you use the phone, this is not real. You know, I see a picture of someone, it's not real, it's partially real. But to the extent that it's not real, we produce more dopamine. So anything that's not real, fantasy, more dopamine. That's why we have to be really worried about this whole goggles that people put on and imagine having sex with somebody with that. This is just
bananas.
It's causing mental illness is what it will cause. It will interfere with our ability to stay awake, being intimate with our partners. Already many men, they listen to their wives talk and it's like, I'm getting tired.
Right.
It doesn't make enough testosterone. If you didn't have any of that, then your brain would adapt to normal stimulation. And normal stimulation would be, oh, I'm so interested to get to know her, to share with her and be with her and so forth. So anyway, those are some of the obstacles. Now we should talk about solutions to all this.
I was going to say, how do we fix that? As my husband and I are two heavy duty parents, career people, making decisions on a daily basis, lots of things coming at us, aging parents. How do we stay out of that trap?
Okay. So, you know, I know you're a dating coach, so I was going to go to dating, but I'm going to talk about what you just said about marriage, because so many people are dating today. They were married or they have been in relationships. Yeah. And part of the advice I'm going to suggest in your relationship you just brought up, and for couples who are working together side by side, children, parents, you know, life is filled with challenges everywhere, right? This is life. And with the right loving support, life is fulfilling. It's going to have its ups and downs, but this is what the real fulfillment is. I mean, some days I work really, really hard and I'm exhausted and tired, but it's such a fulfillment at the end of the day. I did that. So even though some of that was struggle and whatever, I did that. And so sometimes we have our challenges. There's the good feelings after. And particularly that's the love. That's loving yourself, feeling proud of yourself, and also loving your partner, being grateful for your partner. That balances everything. So I want to approach this from the point of view of when we're in stress state, and this is the new stress state, is women feeling more independent on their own, and they don't have that sense of, I have someone who takes care of me so I can take care of my children. Okay, so this is, or I can help my community. And my marriage with Bonnie, because I was the major provider, she had a part-time job. And what I found after she died is that she was giving money to 200 different charities. So when I would travel, you know, what did she do when I would be out traveling, teaching my seminars? She always had these people coming once a year to hear them and give them money. That was her joy. It's like, aww, her, you know, this is part of femininity, which is being able to give to those who can't, who have less. And for a man, you know, at least in traditional sense, our testosterone gets produced when we are the solution to her problems. Anytime there's problems and I can solve it, my testosterone goes up. But what she was doing wasn't necessarily solving problems, but nurturing. See, there's a difference between solving problems and nurturing. My wife was also a gardener. She loved gardening. And when she's gardening, she sometimes have me dig holes. I'm solving a problem when I dig holes. But she's giving nutrients to the soil. So she's not fixing anything. You don't fix a plant, you nurture a plant. And that's a gene inside of women that's very, very fulfilling. However, if she feels I'm doing it all myself and I have no help, it becomes a source of stress.
Massive. So
how do we now help women have less stress? And our husbands can have stress too. So what do we do? Well, we understand that men's stress level goes down when they feel they're a solution to a problem. And women's stress levels go down when they feel they have a solution to their problems. Okay. This is like,
so there's alignment there. There's alignment. We both want the same thing, essentially.
I want to solve your problems and you want my help to solve your problems. Okay.
Totally.
So we're so good to fit together. Now, what men have to know is, we have to have an understanding of how can I solve her problems. Now, in my mother's generation, I grew up in a family. My mother, her dream was having 7 children. She ended up getting 6 boys. I'm not so sure that was her dream. she had a husband who was we're middle class. He was a good provider. So we lived in a nice neighborhood. And We had, I never heard him worrying about money. Okay. Just wasn't in our world. So that was very nice. When you have money, there's a lot of security, but it wasn't exact, you know, I got hand-me-downs. Okay. But I thought that was normal. And that is normal. Your brother's done with their bike, you get their bike, etc. So my dad's a good provider. He fulfilled his role. He went to work every day. He came home. I never saw him angry at my mother. He would just watch TV. Okay. He would get angry at the government, but never at my mother. And if we as boys didn't behave, mom would say, if you don't listen to me, I'm going to tell your father and he'll spank you. So he was the policeman. So those were her two major requirements. This is a different time, a different generation. She didn't have the requirement of running a business together. She didn't have the requirement of sharing her feelings. She didn't have the requirement of needing romance. Where did this all come from? Well, it turns out that when women are more independent, they feel more powerful, they're free. That's a good thing, nothing wrong with that. But when they're doing that, they're not necessarily making the female hormones of estrogen. And so we now know whenever a woman is producing stress hormones, her testosterone is high, she feels independent, and her estrogen levels are low. She doesn't feel enough time, enough money, enough support, enough caring. So this is what's missing. So this feeling of not enough. And I'm sure you've talked to enough women to know that it's kind of an ocean they swim in of not enough time. Okay, just not enough time, right? Swimming through not enough time.
Swimming through not enough time, not enough water.
That's exactly right. Not enough water. So what we want to do as men when our wives are feeling stressed is to realize what she needs is more estrogen. Estrogen gets produced or progesterone. So there's a subtlety here. I'm not going to go into all the subtleties, but if she's cycling, her estrogen needs to go higher and higher towards ovulation. And after that, she still needs estrogen, but she needs more progesterone. Progesterone. And progesterone gets produced when she's doing what she likes to do. And that would be different for two different types of women. We know there's this introvert and there's the extrovert. So if a woman's more extroverted, there's a brain difference in these people, then her progesterone gets produced through social bonding. Okay, she likes social activities. And if she's more introverted, her progesterone gets produced by time to do nice things for herself. Like for my wife, Bonnie, she's a blend of both. She liked to do her gardening. You know, she would pretty much do that and she'd help her people over here. And time was very important that she had enough time, a feeling of time. So we have progesterone needs to get produced. Now, if a woman is stressed, she doesn't make progesterone. So that's when we have something called PMS that happens around 5 days before her period. And it's only because she's making more testosterone than progesterone. And why does she have less progesterone? Because in order to make testosterone, she uses up her progesterone. So it's a biological function. If you're making a lot of testosterone, and that could be trying to solve problems, feeling on your own, have to do it myself. And this is what happens when you're not, when you're a single woman, you know, a lot
right,
of
right. Single mom.
Yeah. Or a mom without support, you know, you don't have support. And I have to say for my mother, she lived in a nice neighborhood where there were other mothers. So there was this sharing where she could depend on other mothers. I could go to other kids' houses and so forth. There's a swimming pool available that we could go to, a community. It was a safe community. All these things made her job easier so she wasn't so stressed. All my dad had to do for their happy relationship, happy family, was go to work, come home, make sure the boys will listen to her by giving them a good spanking if they didn't listen. And that was it. And never get angry at her. He just never got angry. He knew it was unmanly to get angry.
Wow. And,
you know, I don't know how he processed it. I learned later because I get angry and I just don't talk. I just think about it. If a man learns to just think about what he's feeling and not speak it out loud, most of his anger will go away. And this is something that therapy, unfortunately, is not teaching us today, is how to analyze our emotions and not talk about them for men. And for women, how to talk about them and later analyze them and realize that if you have negative feelings, you also have positive feelings. There's always, anytime there's negativity, there's always the positive side of things. But women need to air. They need to bring these things up and share. And when they can share, it makes estrogen. When people come to you and talk about their problems in relationship, it makes estrogen. When they come to their husband and they can talk about their problems at work, that will produce estrogen in her. if she talks about her problems with him, it will temporarily make estrogen for her, but his testosterone will go down. So this is a subtlety. Now we're getting now into the fixes. What women need is to be able to talk about what you're feeling inside. See, I have this inside world, and I want you to see it with love, without judgment, with empathy, and with compassion. I need to be seen by you in this way. If what you're sharing inside is criticism, or what he will take as criticism, then he won't be able to see you, which he'll get defensive. Human beings are defensive. Men are defensive.
Amen. Amen.
Just have to know, if you say something, if I say something to my wife, and it would be, all men listening should know, you don't say to a woman, you shouldn't feel that way. It's we have a million ways to say you shouldn't feel that way. But women are just going to get defensive, meaning I should feel that way. How dare you tell me what I feel? And then, if you know, there's this sort of thing about men talking, women just want to talk. That's just because men keep interrupting.
Okay. They want a fix.
And from her side, the fix would be, hear me. See, that's what's going to raise her estrogen. And men think, if I can explain to you logically why you're overreacting, then you won't feel bad. No, that doesn't work. That works for men. And I suggest every man to say to their husbands, have a rule. I have it. I have a lot of little fixes. If ever I'm upset, and my wife notices I'm upset or annoyed by her, she says, you know, I think you're overreacting. I say, you're right. I hold the belief, and I think every man can logically understand this, that anytime you're having a negative emotion, you're overreacting, because 5 minutes later, the next day, it doesn't exist. So why don't you realize tomorrow I'm not going to be upset about this? So don't be upset about it now. This is just an understanding psychology, which is understanding overreactions, is basic. If I had 10 bad things happen to me, let me be a woman for a moment, had 10 terrible things happen today, each one is like a 10 degree upset. Another one's a 10 degree upset. Another one's a 10 degree. After there's like five of them, the 10 degree upset is now 50 degree upset. And now when there's 10, that 10th one is like 100 degree. They accumulate during the day. Then you get home, you're feeling stressed, and he's left his shoes on the floor again in the wrong place. And you go, honey, how many times I have to tell you, you left your shoes in the wrong place? Her tone of a voice is going to be a 10 times higher than it would be if she had a good day. Yeah. So naturally, he's going to think, honey, you're making a big deal out of nothing. It's just shoes. Do you know all the wonderful things I did today? And you're making a big deal out of this little thing. So he takes it personally, gets defensive. Now, what he can learn is, even if he does take things defensively, just don't speak. And have this knowledge that women will overreact because other things have bothered them as well, and they need to talk. So what you do is you get her to talk about other things that are bothering her. And this is what women can learn as well. If you want to train your husband to listen to your feelings with respect, with empathy, with understanding, you say to your husband, okay, I had a few stressful things happen today. I can't wait to talk to you about it. He said, what is it? And he thinks, I'm going to solve the problem for you and give you great advice. And you say, and I don't need you to say anything. If I talk about it for a few minutes, I'll just feel better. I don't need any advice. He goes, okay. And it will only take 10 minutes. So this is an exercise, practicing.
Beautiful.
Talking 10 minutes. It's amazing. Even last night, my wife wanted to talk, and she's like, I need to talk with you. I said, I'm really tired. And she said, okay, this is the 10 minutes. We have a rule that several times in the week, anytime she wants me to do something and she puts up 10 minutes, as a 10-minute window, I will do whatever she asks me to do. Okay, this is, and particularly when it comes to talking, if I'm tired and I'm in my cave, 10 minutes. Okay, 10 minutes.
10 minutes. I got you.
It's amazing if you give a man a time limit, a short time limit, how much energy he has to do it. But if you just say, I want to talk, in his mind, he goes, how long is that going to be? There's no...
What does that mean?
What's going to happen here? So you give him a job description, 10 minutes. You don't have to say anything. I'll feel better. What man doesn't happy to do that? Okay. It's just being real clear about what do I need right now? And during that time, it shouldn't be the time where you're going to, now I want to share with you why I'm upset with you. No, that's not the right time to do that. I just want to talk about my day. Because talking about your day brings him closer into you. That's intimacy. Today I was so-and-so and I was frustrated. And then this happened. It was so disappointing. And whenever you can use an emotion, and this is for the women dating as well. You're dating. You want to, number one thing in dating, don't ask men too many questions. Okay, men, I'm sure you've read Men from Mars on a date. Don't ask so many questions. When he talks for a while, then you say, well, that's a good idea. Oh, that makes sense. So that was helpful. And then you need to share more about yourself. He can't bond with you unless he goes into you and you share. But share about yourself without any sort of hostility towards him, of course. But share, you know, today I had a frustrating day. It was real big disappointment. I thought this was going to happen. And every time I go to this place, I'm concerned this is going to happen. This is like talking about your life with a little emotion. When you have emotion, men are like, okay, let me solve your problem.
Let me help, honey. Let me help.
That's right. That's
all. Put his cape on and come and save you.
Come and save you. If there's a fire, I'm a fireman. Let me put it out. But when you're sharing those emotions, just, you know, basically you're just sharing it. And then afterwards, you just say this thing, and it's not really a big deal, because then he gets this other message. There's this woman with emotions. She has vulnerability, and she's not like overwhelmed by all these problems. And it's not a big deal. And probably up tomorrow, I'll do this and this and this. Or he might interrupt with a little solution. Just give him a little, well, that's a good idea. But really, I like talking about it. And then I feel better, because the truth is, it's not a big deal. And I'm so grateful I have this job. You know, that blew my mind in the beginning when I married Bonnie. She was complaining about her job. And I was saying, quit that job. I can make enough money. You don't have to go to that job. And she said, John, I love my job. I just like to talk about the problems of the day. Makes me feel closer to you. And I got to go, what? You know, because for men, typically, if they're talking, they're solving a problem, they're conveying information or gathering information in order to solve a problem. Why is that? Because men run on primarily testosterone, and testosterone is solving problems, fix it, solving problems. So women can be the damsel in distress. I'm feeling this and this and this, and I just need to talk about it. And it feels so good. It feels really nice, you know, to share that with you. And it's not a big deal, and I'm feeling better now, and it's good to meet you or good to be on a date with you. Then he gets an idea that this is a woman who's not intimidating as well. Because see, when women are on their male side, they can be very intimidating, you know, like, and what I mean by intimidating is a man goes, what can I do for you? It's like, there's nothing I can do for you. Why am I with you? Our whole purpose is feeling, what can I do? Because everything we do as men also says, what's my reward? Okay, and what is the reward? I want to feel appreciated. I want to feel that you can trust me, that I can be your hero, that I can be the guy you can lean on, that I can be the guy you're attracted to. I can earn that. And if you have to give them the opportunity to earn it, let them do things for you.
And I like that you said that, because it's not about, I mean, because now there's so many women, to your point, that are in the workforce and they're partners and business owners and surgeons and they're making great money, but it's not your financial competence or your level that has to be intimidating. It's not your success that is intimidating. It's something else. And I talk about this a lot with our client bases. You're not doomed because you're a successful professional woman. That doesn't make you intimidating because of that. If a guy's intimidated just by the fact of what your title is, then he's not the one for you.
And even if he is a little bit, but there's another reason to be with him. By softening, you have to find the part of you that, you know, and this book, I like page 23. I'm just going to read real quickly or part of it. It's a list of why you need men. Okay.
We need to all tape this up in our bedroom. Why we need men.
Why I need a man. Because see, when you're feeling I need help, you make estrogen. Estrogen levels, and I can get help. It's not like I need help and nobody's there. That's not a pot, but I need help and maybe he can give me help. You're actually putting out pheromones of estrogen, waking up his testosterone to be interested in you. It has to be a problem for a man to solve, and it doesn't have to be you're the problem. It's just a need. There's a need that he has value for. So we want to define now. It used to be you just needed a man to make money. As soon as you can make money, you don't need a man to make money. It'd be nice to have him make money too, but it's not as important. It's not like you're hungry for, I need to pay these bills. I need a man. Okay. I'd like to have help. But so here's the first one. She needs a man for romantic companionship. The more testosterone a woman can make, the greater her need for romantic companionship is. Why? Because the greatest producer of estrogen is romantic companionship. That's it.
That's it.
That's the remedy. If you're a woman and you can look forward to coming home to husband with romantic skills, and he's your romantic companion, already just thinking about that, your estrogen levels go up while you're at the workplace. It will lower your stress. Just think, oh, I'm going to go on a date. This, and what men don't know is you've got a romantic date planned a week in advance. Every day she's looking forward to that. You're getting credit for that date every day as she looks forward to it. Men make the mistake, whether they're dating or they're married, they say, honey, what do you want to do tonight? It's not romantic at all. What's romantic is to anticipate, so she can anticipate something coming along. And sometimes a surprise is certainly romantic. But really, once you're living with a partner for many years, how many surprises are you going to have? But what you do is you have a conversation a week in advance where you discuss with her, let's talk about some of the things we could do next weekend. Emphasis, we could do, meaning what she would like to do, not what he would like to do. This is very important, for romance is not what he likes to do. Romance is him doing something for her. So what I share for women is women don't want to say, I want to do this. And he just says, yes, we'll do that. Then it's like you're controlling and you're the boss thing. Then you also feel the pressure. Is he going to like it? Is he not going to like it? So here's a solution. There's all these creative solutions. So you have a conversation. Let's talk about next week. I'm being the woman. Here's three things I'd like to do. You pick. Done. He then picks. You're relieved of any responsibility. He now knows, assured, I can make her happy and I can take the pick. Any of those picks should work. Not, you know, if he doesn't pick the one you want the most, you shouldn't be disappointed. You're giving him three options.
Gave him three options. Be happy with any one of the three. He's not a mind reader.
And you are so good at what your response is, because you understand that most women don't. What men are looking for primarily is that he can provide something that makes you happy.
Amen.
And so, when you're happy, he is so happy. It's just the bottom line. And women go, well, I'm happy when he's happy. Yeah, you're happy if you're already happy. And he's
right.
If you're not happy and he's happy, that's not right balance. We want equal happiness here.
What do they say? If mama's not happy, ain't nobody happy.
Right. And I didn't know this. I would go, my career has very happy moments. I would go to New York and live the high life for a week or 3 days. I come home. I met so-and-so and I met so-and-so. And I watch a dark cloud come into the house. Do you know what it's like to be here with the kids alone without you? We had a plumbing break. We had a this and a this. My happiness did nothing for her. Turn that around. If I'm unhappy about something and my wife comes home and says, oh, I had the best day ever, suddenly my mood is lifted. Because whenever a woman is happy, a man will take credit for it. Like, I did that.
Even if I produced that.
Even if I take her on a movie and she likes the movie, I kind of felt, I wrote that movie. Yeah.
Right. It's like, you picked a great restaurant, John. This was a great date. It's like, oh, you're feeling a little elevated.
That's right. That's it. The reality. And that's, success creates testosterone. Men need 10 times more testosterone than women. And this is a biological reality. And women need 10 times, at least 10 times, to be happy. They need it to double with romance. So the little romantic skills. So another romantic skill is second on this list. We won't do the whole list, but it's, she needs a man to be faithful. Commitment is the most important thing for a woman to feel safe, because as time passes, problems accumulate. People think, oh, you know, he's going to leave me or she's going to leave me. And that creates insecurity. And when women don't feel safe, their estrogen levels can't go up. Okay, so they just stay down. So really, the most important thing is, over a long period of time, I'm with you 100% and I'm not going anywhere. And I do a little exercise just for the married couples, or once your partner says they love you, then here you can just say, you know, as a woman with my job, and this, you know, this is something you can do with your husband, Bella. It's so sweet. And couples, when they're dating in a committed relationship, can do this. But it's once you get to the place of, I love you, and you're saying, I love you, then we do this every day. I highly recommend it, even though it doesn't sound authentic. It actually is. People say, I want to feel like we felt in the beginning of the relationship. So what did you feel in the beginning of the relationship? Well, what women are feeling in the beginning of a relationship is, do you like me? Do you love me? Are you committed to me? And how much do you love me? Are you happy to be with me? Are you glad you're with me? Do you think I'm beautiful? All those things. That's what you feel in the beginning of a relationship. So if you want to feel like the beginning of a relationship, every day I call it the reassurance exercise. Randomly during the day, I suggest for men to initiate 4 hugs a day in their marriage. That could be when you first get up, when you leave, when you come back, when you go before bed, always 4 hugs. Just make it a routine, men, of pursuing women. Each time, a little more estrogen, a little more estrogen. You have to help keep it up for women. So the next thing, after one of those hugs, or at any other random time when she feels to do it, she says to her husband, do you like me? He says, yes. Do you love me? He says, yes, I love you. Then she says, how much do you love me? I love you with all my heart. Do you think I'm beautiful? I think you're so beautiful. Are you happy to be with me? I am happy to be with you. Are you glad you married me? Yeah, I'm so glad. Do you regret marrying me? I don't regret it. Are you still angry about that thing the other day? I'm not angry at all. And what you experience is this reassurance, because with every time he says one of those statements that you've asked to get reassurance is, and women are always looking for reassurance that they're loved. You don't know yourself at all if you're not looking for it. I, as a man, always looking for reassurance that I'm successful. Okay, that's the male side needs reassurance for that. The female side primarily needs reassurance that I'm a priority, that I'm seen, I'm heard, I'm loved, I'm adored. Okay, so these are like feelings inside. So, and what's interesting, I'm just saying, you know, a woman knows when you're making love how, as you kiss and you touch and your bodies get closer, certain hormones get produced. More estrogen starts going up. Same thing by asking the question. You say, do you like me? Sure. I'm still in my head. See, men are most of the time in their head. They're not in their estrogen. They're more in their testosterone. It takes a while for their estrogen levels to start rising to meet their testosterone. And that's what making love is men's testosterone goes really high, and then they start feeling more and more love, and they enjoy their partner, goes higher and higher and higher like that. Well, you're doing this little process of just being patient with it. Do you like me? Yes. Do you love me? Yes. How much do you love me? With all my heart. And usually if I'm busy in my head, I'm not really feeling that. But after I get to, do you think I'm beautiful? Boom. It clicks into the male-female dynamic more, which is, yes, I think you're so beautiful. Because every woman needs to hear that. And if you need to hear it, solve the problem. If I solve the problem, my testosterone goes up as my estrogen's going up. It's powerful. And you can do it every day. And then what you can do, it's like foreplay. And then when you do have making love, you can do it while you're making love instead of being there in silence. You know, sometimes my partner, as she's going higher and higher, is like, tell me again. Do you love me? Do you love me? Yes, I love you. I love you. I love you. It's bringing the feelings in the heart up into the vocal cords. You see, it's a whole body experience. And this is just the sweetness of being transparent of we need love and we need that reassurance. And often men say, well, what about me? Do I get the reassurance? I say, yeah, you're looking for reassurance too by her being happy. Anytime my wife is happy, I feel like I did that. And she can say, thank you. What a good job. And that makes sense. And I'm so, wow, you are so helpful. Oh, I'm so glad you're home. These are the kind of phrases that give men the reassurance that they're needed and that they're a success. Whereas for men, it's more direct about love statements. And it's different from him just saying those things. Honey, I love you so much. I love you so much. There needs to be a little bit of interaction to raise his estrogen up. So it's her actually having the openness that he fills her up and the openness and he fills her up. Each one of those statements is a little more vulnerable.
I love that. And I find with my husband, just that simple expression of, wow, thank you for fixing that cabinet. Like it makes so much less noise and it's just nicer. I appreciate that. It's like, wow, you know, I was looking at the light above the sink. That might need fixing too. Suddenly I was like, it does. But just that little, like, thank you for doing that. I see you. Something else gets fixed. I was like, here, I cracked the code.
Yeah, thank you, and I'm glad, and I'm so relieved, and that was so helpful. Doesn't always have to be a thank you, because one word can be a little redundant with that, but it's like, I'm so happy about that, it was so helpful, oh, I'm so glad you did that, or now I'm enjoying my new pot that you bought me, you know? It's just like, and then after you go on a date, you take pictures, or, you know, we go on little vacations as a family. You know, my kids are very smart. They also do. They take pictures. They send us pictures of it. Bonnie makes little albums of it. Then she'll show the album to friends. I'm getting points all the time, you know, because she's remembering those times. So this is, you know, women have the love, and there's this biological difference between men and women. We just have to remember we're different. We're different, and we can think we're the same, and we get there's certain overlap without a doubt.
For sure.
But when we look at the real biological difference between men and women, all it is, every boy comes into this world with just like a little girl. Okay, there's no difference until 3 weeks. And then the Y chromosome that boys have and girls don't, it releases 23 genes. It activates those genes. And those genes, their function and purpose is to override certain female genes. Okay, so that, like the estrogen production. That gene over there, from one of the genes from the Y chromosome, it overrides my ability to make estrogen and makes my body such that testosterone lowers my stress and not estrogen lowers my stress. Now, it can be that those genes can be overridden as well by a culture that says men should be like more like women. And that's what's sort of happening today as we're thinking that the only way to experience intimacy is for men to talk about their feelings. I suggest for women on a date and for wives, when your partner becomes quiet, don't say, what are you feeling? What you can say, because you're looking for reassurance. Are they mad at me? Does he like me? Did I say something wrong? What's happening? He's suddenly disconnected from me. Such a simple concept. It's just simply look at him and just go, so you're thinking about what I said? And he'll say, yes. And you'll, in the tone of his voice, it will be reassuring, because biologically, whenever men are challenged in some way, it's not a negative. I'm challenged right now. I'm always challenged. You know, I'm doing my work. There's challenges. But when men are challenged, sometimes what they start to make a little adrenaline. When they make adrenaline, they disconnect from their emotions. Now, that's the opposite for women. When women experience a little adrenaline, they have 8 times more increase of blood flow to the emotional part of the brain. So that's called little stress causes more emotional reaction in women, whereas little stress causes men to detach from emotional reaction.
But it's almost like they're ready to go into fight or flight.
That would be the next step, but they're not there. They're in the place of, ironically, fight or flight is suddenly he pulls away, and if he feels powerless, then his estrogen shoots up. It's when estrogen goes up that he feels angry. But before that, he's just thinking. But when he's thinking, women think, is he angry with me? Because for women, when they pull away, they're angry with you. They don't trust you. You know, there's a disconnect. It's like, I'm not safe, so I'm going to pull away. Men pull away just to think about what the solution is. So if you're talking about problems and he has not yet been informed that he doesn't have to solve the problem, but this is a conversation where you're just listening to her, two kinds of conversations. One, my wife has a problem. She wants to know what I think. Be clear about that. If I just assume every time she's talking and she just needs to talk because her estrogen will go up and she'll feel better. And I will never give solutions unless my wife says to me, so I want to know what you think I should do about this. Right. My daughter has to do this. I'm a good listener with my daughter, Lauren. She also teaches this stuff. She says, okay, now I've shared that. I feel better. Now tell me what you think about that. But only when she feels more at ease and comfortable and validated for her feeling do I come in with a solution of what I think she could do differently or not. And otherwise, I don't. I'm really into, you know, a very liberal point of view, let people be who they are. But at the same time, if you want my help, I'm happy to be there for you.
And I love that.
Then the first level of help for women when they're stressed is she needs to be able to talk about what's going on inside of her. And ideally, she can learn to express emotion during that time. Not all women feel safe to do that. You know, it's a difference just saying there was traffic on the bridge today. Or she could say, it was so frustrating. There was so much traffic on the bridge. Or I got there late and I was so concerned. and worried that people are going to judge me because of that, and I might lose that job. Whatever. See, if you bring in emotion, men connect to you. If you just say there was traffic on the bridge, he's like, yeah, there's always traffic on the bridge. But if you're frustrated, but the catch 22 is then he'll say, until he learns how to listen, he'll say something like, she says, oh, I was so frustrated, there's traffic on the bridge. Then he'll say, well, there's always traffic on the bridge, so why be frustrated?
Just leave 15 minutes earlier. Right. Like, okay, that's exactly like, okay, you're asking me for a solution. You know, what I found with my husband, my kids, when they'll say, well, and they just start talking about something, I'm like, what kind of a friend do you want me to be right now? Do you want me to listen or do you want feedback as well? And they're like, okay, just listen first, and then we can talk about it after.
That's good. That's it. That's so good.
That's my favorite line. What kind of a friend do you want me to be right now?
I love that. It's a great one. And I want to define for people. Somebody said this, and I loved it. It was definition of a friend is someone who delights in your presence with no intention to change you.
That's great.
Just delighted to be with you. You know, I think about my friends. I don't fix them. I'm not trying to change them. I let them be. I even have to do this because I'm like this counselor and therapist and author. My friends want me to help them in a relationship and said, no.
I'm off duty. The doctor is not in.
I'm just going to hear you. I'm happy for you. Maybe occasionally I give a little piece of a tidbit or something, but I'm not like focused on trying to change them. But in my work, I always want to produce a result. And if my wife asks for a question and she's clear about that, then I'm happy to give her my thoughts. But even then, I have to be not attached to the outcome. More so with an intimate partner, because in intimate relationships, we have no defenses. We become... Well, we take off our clothes together. And we, you know, when was the last time you took off your clothes with somebody? Is when you were a child, when you were naked. And that's the most beautiful thing about being married, is you can hug together, you can be naked together, you can express what you're feeling inside. It's just, this is the liberation that marriage can provide for people. And I just want another plug for the happy married couples. They exist. People are falling in love today. It's not all bad news. And with there's research showing now that married couples, heterosexual married couples, and it's data, heterosexual married couples live longer than any of the other categories, and we're healthier. So if that's an option available to you, go for it, because you'll live longer, you'll be healthier. Doesn't mean things will be perfect, of course, but when I tell that story, people say to me, well, that's the happy marriages, right? And I said, no, that's the average of all marriages. And there's something about staying married that keeps a man's testosterone up, okay, which is commitment. Commitment is one of the most powerful things for men. I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to follow through, and I'm going to do it. And my compassion is for couples in our modern world today, because nobody has taught them what you're teaching people, which is how men and women are different and how we can improve our communication and fulfill each other's needs more effectively and more successfully.
Amen. And you can have a happy marriage, ladies and gentlemen listening to this. Picking the right person is crucial, right? And so once you do that, you can be in one of those happy marriages. So it's not all gloom and doom out there. Like John said, yes, relationships are work. Anything worth having in life is work, but it's not going to be the soul sucking kind of work that you're thinking about. It's work just like you would do in anything to continue to be successful in any realm of your career. So yes, a good marriage is so worth it. And a good relationship is so worth it. You, listener, might not want to get married. You might've said, okay, been there, done that, but you want the lid to your pot. We are talking about the same thing here.
I like your phrase, the lid to the pot.
Well, and I say that, John, because a pot is complete as it is, right? We are complete individuals. We're happy, we're healthy, we're successful, we've got friends, we've got family, but that lid just makes it nicer.
You know, I have another way of saying it. I love what you just said, is that as an independent person, I'm happy and fulfilled, but in a relationship, I can be happier. I look to my partner to become happier, but I'm happy. And when you have that foundation of fulfillment within yourself, that self-love and a life that's rich, yeah, then your partner enhances it. And then I look at that through the glasses of gender differences. What makes me really, really happy is that I'm already happy in my life. I'm a successful guy. I work hard. I've got friends. I love myself. I have a spiritual relationship with God. I have all this good stuff. But when I do things to make my wife happier, I am happier. And her thing is she's a happy woman. But when I do things to make her happier, she becomes happier. So it's the woman who I'm of service to take her to happy. But it also frees me when I have that concept. I'm not like responsible for her unhappiness. That's her job. I may be responsible for helping her be unhappy, and I can learn how to not.
Yeah. Right.
Most men, when you have an unhappy wife, usually the way they respond to that makes her more unhappy. Okay.
100%.
So we are responsible to find our happiness inside, but to become happier, we can share with each other. And what women can share is the opportunity for a man to make her happier. And what I can do is make use of that opportunity to make her happier. So it's a little bit of difference, but in relationships, we start from our own self-love.
Isn't that beautiful? I love that. Well, this was beyond my expectations. And I'm so grateful for this interview and for you and for the work that you have done for all of us in the world. So are there any last gems that I haven't asked you about that you want to drop on us?
No, I think that was perfect. I like the lid on the pot. I think that's where we're looking for relationships, have a lid on the pot. That's good for me. And that marriage is an opportunity to live longer and be healthier, because that's a big challenge today. And of course, how to be happier is by giving, for women, give a man the opportunity again and again to make you happier. And sometimes he'll disappoint you. So give him the opportunity again and find it again. And sometimes men will fail. You have to pick yourself back up and try again and try again and challenge yourself. If it's not working, how can I make a shift in the way I'm interacting, as opposed to always just focused on how my partner's not pulling their weight, so to speak?
Oh, that's great advice. Absolutely. And we will put your new book. Tell us again what the title is, and everybody, the link will be in the show notes. I suggest you run, don't walk, to buy it. Beyond Mars and Venus, Relationship Skills for Today's Complex World. Amazing. Yes.
It's all about our hormones and how we can consciously, I behave in a way all day long, knowing what my wife needs to get a little extra surge of her estrogen, while she's busy doing her business. She's a very businesswoman, my new wife. How to keep her happy is so she anticipates the support I give her in our marriage, which is wisdom. I didn't know this when I was a young guy, you know, how much power we can have in our relationships.
Yeah, and we've got the steering wheel, and I love how she just puts up 10 fingers. I need 10 minutes. I'm going to start to do that. I love that.
Okay, here's another one. 10 minutes is occasionally, a few times a week. This every day is her discipline. I mean, really, when I say, please, honey, do this, it will make our marriage better. It's the 5-minute request. And so when you put up 5 fingers, it says, I'm going to ask you, she's saying this with the 5 fingers, is a signal. I'm going to ask you to do something that I could do for myself, but I don't have to do it, because you're going to eagerly and be happy to do it right away for me.
Isn't that a That's wonderful signal time? To be eager and happy with whatever she asks you to do at that moment.
As long as it's within 5 minutes. And of course, my wife says, what I want in 5 minutes is to be able to do this for 20 minutes. I said, no, that's just being playful. But the dynamic here is, if a man thinks it's only 5 minutes and I'm going to get a surge of happiness in my wife and I'm going to help correct one of the challenges she faces every day, because what is that challenge women face? The challenge is their mind doesn't turn off to feeling, I have to do, I have to do, I have to do, I have to do. So here's something that she could do for herself, but she doesn't have to do. So a concrete experience of letting her settle for a moment, which could be, run and get me an oil for a foot massage. Take off my right foot. Take my right shoe. Take off my left shoe. Massage this foot. Give orders, commands the whole time. It's only 5 minutes, and it's agreed.
5 minutes. Put the timer on.
You know, clean up the kitchen. Do as much as you can. Clean up the sink right now. Go empty the trash. Go pick up the clothes in the wherever. You know, just do this, change this light bulb, whatever, some little task that you would normally be doing in your busy day, you stop. And you have to stop during that time and watch him do it. Okay. It's not like you do this so I can go do something else. We're trying to create a break from that sense of have to do, have to do, have to do. And it would realign the hormones. It's a powerful thing. Every day, 1 5-minute request.
Okay, everybody, get your 5-minute requests ready. I can't wait to hear what they are. So, John Gray, thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on the Smart Dating Academy podcast. We would love to have you back again, and all the very best success. You don't need the luck, but we wish you nothing but well with your new book. And smart daters, go out and buy that so we can start making all those happy hormones in the dating world. So smart daters, I hope you are motivated and you feel like you can take the steering wheel of your dating life this week. You've heard how to do it. You know how to make yourself happier. You know how to make your date happier. So if you're ready for that consultation, send us an email. We're here to help you because, as you know, fall starts the peak into peak dating season. And we know what starts to happen in December. Dating numbers go bananas. So if you're ready for the lid to your pot, here we go. Thank you again. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.